5:20, and this is the KDLL Evening News for Thursday, December 18th on 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up, a new federal report shows the Arctic continues to warm faster than other parts of the world. But first, a former Soldotna High School teacher and union president was sentenced to 77 years and 1 month in prison Thursday morning in Kenai. 37-year-old Nathaniel Erfirth was convicted this summer of sexually abusing and exploiting a former student while she was still a minor. Although sentenced to more than 70 years, a majority of that was suspended. Erfirth's active jail time is 20 years and 1 month, and he'll be eligible for parole before then. The sentence falls between what the two sides in the case asked for. State prosecutors wanted Erfirth to serve a minimum of 30 active years, while the defense requested 7.5 years. It's been about 4 months since Kenai jurors found Erfirth guilty of 28 of the 46 criminal counts he faced in the case. After weeks of testimony, evidence, and arguments, jurors deliberated for multiple days before returning their verdict. Superior Court Judge Kelly Lawson says parts of the case have been difficult for her while she deliberated sentencing, but she says other parts weren't so difficult, like the integrity of the judicial process.
Despite the letters and continued claim of innocence on behalf of the defendant, I have no reason to doubt the jury's decision.
Lawson explained the court's effort to ensure a fair and impartial jury. The process included mailing questionnaires to potential jurors, interviewing them over multiple days, and then selecting a group of people both lawyers agreed on. During the trial, Kenai District Attorney Dan Striegel argued Erfirth groomed and took advantage of a vulnerable student to start a sexual relationship with her. He argues Erfirth exploited his high standing in the community and his parental role in the student's life, which should be considered during sentencing.
The impact overall on the community is extreme. People have to send their children to schools. People have to send their children to teachers, and they need to trust those teachers to care for their children because it is a substantial part of that minor's life.
But Erfirth and his lawyers say he's a victim of false allegations. They say the former student has a pattern of manipulation and compulsive lying. Ahead of sentencing, Erfirth's lawyer compiled a 100-plus page document of sentencing examples in other second-degree sexual abuse of a minor cases. The packet also included letters of support from Erfirth's friends and family and the defense's proposed sentence. They asked for leniency from Lawson and for her to consider Erfirth's past life of public service and the future of his two young children. Eric Derleth, the defense attorney, says attention on the case will ensure a lifelong scarlet letter for Erfirth, regardless of a court sentence.
Whatever modest freedom he'll regain will be hemmed in by supervision and practical barriers in our society that attach to this kind of offense and by a stigma that doesn't expire when the jail door opens.
Since Erfirth's arrest more than 2 years ago, he and his lawyer have maintained he is innocent of the state's charges. Last week, Erfirth reiterated in court he should have been acquitted by jurors and said Striegel portrayed him dishonestly during the trial.
He described years of conduct that simply did not occur, of intents that were never there, of secrets that didn't exist. It's been an insane couple of years to sit here and listen to my life rewritten so that a conviction could be obtained.
Lawson, the judge, seemed to share the state's concerns. When determining sentencing, Lawson said she weighed multiple factors, including Erfirth's lack of a criminal record, jury aggravators, existing case law, and Erfirth's current behavior.
The seriousness of the conduct here, the impact these crimes have on the community, his unwillingness to accept responsibility, and his efforts to fault the victim support a requirement for isolation. Not only did the defendant take advantage of the victim and her particular vulnerabilities, it seems he used the vulnerabilities of those around her to further his influence.
Lawson called the defense's blame of the former student misplaced, given the position of authority Erfirth held over her at the time of the abuse. And she gave Erfirth a harsher sentence for abuse that occurred inside Soldotna High School.
Schools are one of the few places in the community where parents should feel the most safe and secure when leaving their children in the care of other adults. Defendant was a teacher, and a leader in that community. He had the respect and confidence of the victim, and he abused her trust, her mother's trust, and the community's trust.
After Thursday's sentencing, Derleth said Erfurth plans to appeal his case. In a written statement, Derleth said, quote, "Following today's sentencing, Nathaniel Erfurth maintains his innocence and continues to believe that serious mistakes occurred in his case. He placed his trust in the jury and in the court system, and he now turns his focus to the appellate courts, trusting that the errors made at trial will entitle him to a new trial and a fair opportunity to clear his name," end quote. In his own statement, Kenai Peninsula Borough School District Superintendent Clayton Holland called Erfurth's actions a, quote, "serious betrayal of trust." He wasn't superintendent at the time the abuse occurred, but says concerns were reported to law enforcement. Holland wrote, quote, "Under the current administration, the district has strengthened boundary crossing policies, clarified expectations, and implemented practices focused on prevention, accountability, and student safety. The district remains fully committed to strong safeguards, mandatory reporting, and ongoing training. Student safety has been and will remain the highest priority," end quote. Erfurth's sentence of 77 years and 1 month correspond to separate counts of abuse, including at his home, a tiny house on his former property, and his classroom at Soldotna High School, as well as 1 month for each of the remaining 25 counts. Upon his release from prison, Erfurth will be required to register as a sex offender for the rest of his life and undergo sex offender treatment, among other things. And finally, the Arctic continues to warm faster than other parts of the world and is experiencing record high temperatures and record low levels of sea ice. That's according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which released its annual report card for the region on Tuesday. As the Alaska Desk's Eliona Nyden reports, those findings directly affect Alaska communities.
The Arctic report card has been documenting changes in snow and sea ice cover, as well as air and ocean temperatures in the northern part of the globe for the past 20 years. It has shown that in that time, the Arctic's annual temperature has increased at more than double the global rate of temperature changes. Hannah Marie Ladd is the director of Indigenous Sentinels Network, a tribally owned program that helps Alaska Native communities monitor their environment. She's also a lead author of this year's Arctic Report card for the chapter about community-led observations on St. Paul Island in the Bering Sea.
These changes cascade directly into people's lives, affecting fisheries, coastal safety, and subsistence harvests. We are no longer just documenting warming. We are witnessing an entire marine ecosystem, which is tied to our economies and culture, transform within a single generation.
Ladd was one of roughly half a dozen speakers from various research agencies who detailed this year's report at a press conference. The report is the work of more than 100 authors from 13 countries. One big takeaway is that the Arctic region experienced some of the highest temperatures since the turn of the century. Matthew Druckenmiller is a senior scientist at the National Snow and Ice Data Center in Colorado and lead editor of this year's report.
October 2024 through September 2025, the Arctic experienced the highest temperatures on record since at least 1900. This included the warmest autumn, the second warmest winter, and the third warmest summer ever observed.
The rapid warming of the Arctic is amplified by the loss of reflective sea ice and snow. The report showed that last March, Arctic winter sea ice reached its lowest annual maximum extent in nearly 50 years of satellite records. Druckenmiller says that the oldest, thickest ice has also declined by over 95% since the 80s.
This thinner ice is then much more mobile with wind and current and much less resilient against warming waters. This means much more unpredictable ice conditions for those both living and working in the Arctic.
The Arctic is changing on land too. The report highlights an emerging phenomenon called rusting rivers. That's when permafrost thaw causes groundwater to seep deeper and interact with mineral deposits, which likely turns some streams and rivers to a rusty orange color. Abigail Pruitt is a postdoctoral researcher at the University of California, Davis, who studies rusting rivers. She says that in Alaska, over 200 streams turned orange in recent years, and that affected aquatic biodiversity and water quality.
Within Kobuk Valley National Park, we observed the complete loss of juvenile Dolly Varden and Slimy Sculpin in a tributary to the Akilik River when it turned orange. Beyond the effects on fish, resting rivers may impact drinking water supplies to rural communities as well.
The report highlights how Indigenous communities have been observing the changes in the environment and wildlife and collaborating with scientists to better understand those changes. Ladd, with the Indigenous Sentinels Network, describes one example of such work. She says that St. Paul residents collect samples of harvested traditional foods, like seabirds, marine mammals, and halibut. Those samples are tested in a tribally owned lab and, with the help from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, analyzed for contaminants like mercury. She says it is a model for resilience, data sovereignty, and collaborative research.
Indigenous leadership, local workforce development, and community-driven observing are not optional. They are essential to understanding the Arctic that we have today and preparing for the Arctic we are moving into.
In response to your question about how federal cuts to climate science might affect the future of the Arctic report card, NOAA officials said that they will continue their efforts to observe the change in environment. In Anchorage, I'm Alena Naiden.
And that'll be all for tonight's KDLL Evening News. We had help from Alena Naiden in Anchorage. You can re-listen to this newscast and find our other stories online at kdll.org. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Have a great night.
The KDLL Board of Directors meets at 5:30 p.m. the second Thursday of the month at KDLL Studios in the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District building in Kenai and over Zoom. Meetings are open to the public. If you have an item you'd like to submit for board consideration, email info@kdll.org. Or if you're interested in joining the board, call 907-513-1996.
On SatNet, you'll hear the result of deep dives into the music library for popular and obscure music from the 50s forward. And just released or soon to be released recordings by both new and familiar friends. I'm Robert Walsh. Please join me Thursday evenings at 7 o'clock on KDLL Kenai Soldotna for SatNet, the Americana Music Catch of the Week.